We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome to this webinar, Empowering Students with News Literacy, and we are excited for you to join us. So who are we? Well, first, we want to welcome you. I'm Shaylin Farnsworth from the News Literacy Project. I'm the National Director of Educator Outreach and Success. I reside in Iowa, and the snow is melting. It's 35 degrees, Ebony, and everyone, if you're in middle school or younger, is wearing their shorts already. They're busting out shorts because we finally have warm weather. But we're so glad you are here with us. And again, you can connect with us through a variety of means. But I do want to share an introduction with my colleague here, Ebony. Go ahead and take it away.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this webinar. We are so excited to be kicking off today's event. You are really in for a treat. This is going to be such a robust conversation. My name is Ebony, and I have the pleasure of working alongside Shaylin at the News Literacy Project. And I also have the pleasure of working with these ambassadors that you will hear from in just a moment. I'll talk a little bit about the ambassador program also in just a moment, but a little bit about me. I'm the vice president of the Educator Network at the News Literacy Project. And our work really focuses on building this robust community of educators that I'm so excited to talk a little bit more with each of you about. We have resources, supports, and engagement with educators on the ground to really build out this local footprint of news literacy educators in communities all across the country. And so it's such a pleasure to be here. It's really an honor to be engaging in this important conversation with each of you. And I, for one, am so excited to hear from our ambassadors in just a moment. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone. So I would love to introduce News Lit Nation before we hear from our ambassadors today. And so, as I mentioned just a moment ago, my work really focuses on building this community of educators in communities all across the country. And so on February 3rd, the News Literacy Project launched News Lit Nation, which is a brand new community. It's a professional learning community that you can join right now. And I'm going to tell you how to do that in just a moment. But included in this community, you can find our NLP ambassadors, and three of the 14 are joining us, of the 13 are joining us today for this conversation. You can also find resources and supports. You can see our resource library, which is available on newslit.org if you just click the educators tab. And then you can also find forums and message boards, which is the way that we allow our professional community to engage with one another. It's this really special and unique opportunity for you all to connect with each other across grades, across the entire education spectrum, across all contexts, and be able to get resources and supports to share ideas and to have a community that's really cultivated on this idea of news literacy education embedded in the American education experience. And then you can also find event registration, and there's so much more. But what I'd like to do now is introduce you to this community. I'm so honored to share this video about News Lit Nation and how you can become a part of this professional community.
Educators, your students are facing the most challenging information landscape in history. Rumors, conspiracy theories, and false information compete for attention alongside facts, evidence, and truth. Without news literacy, young people are at a significant civic disadvantage. You are working to provide your students with the tools they need to separate fact from fiction. You don't have to do it alone. Now, there's News Lit Nation, brought to you by the News Literacy Project, the nation's leading provider of news literacy education. News Lit Nation is a community of educators like you who are working to build a future founded on facts. To get started, register at newslitnation.org. There you'll find free resources, a place to exchange best practices with colleagues in the field, the ability to connect with news literacy ambassadors in your area, and access to exclusive professional development opportunities, webinars, and other training. Add your voice to the growing chorus of news literacy educators across the nation. Join NewsLit Nation today. Democracy depends on it.
Here's the thing, educators. We know that you, each of you, are on the front line in this fight against misinformation. And so we want to make sure that you are equipped with all of the tools, resources, and supports you need from experts, both at NLP, but also within your own community, experts who are teaching in the classrooms, who are doing this work every single day. And so that leads me to our NewsLit Nation ambassadors. And again, three of the 13 ambassadors are joining us today, and you will hear from them in just a moment. We have ambassadors from all across the country that you can connect with. You can also find our events at NewsLit Nation Live. That's happening on newslit.org, where you can register for events directly on the website. And then finally, our resource library. So if you click, you can have access to our entire suite of resources and supports, including Checkology, which Shailen will speak about in just a moment, all of which is free. It's free to join. It's free to become a part of this community. We just want to make sure that we empower you with everything you need to be on the ground and advocating for news literacy education in your schools, to do the work that many of you are already doing. But now you can do it in community with other educators who also believe in the mission, who also believe in this work, and who are fighting alongside with you on the front lines in this fight against misinformation. So that is NewsLit Nation.
I love it, Ebony. It gives me chills because exactly what you're empowering everyone and everything that we're sharing with you and the examples from the ambassadors are completely free. All educator resources, all students. So everything we're sharing today is free. So let's meet our ambassadors, Ebony.
Let's do it. So firstly, I'm going to kick it off to you, Dr. Kathy. Please just share with us a little bit about your background. And I just have to say that Dr. Kathy is one of our ambassadors from Boston. Incredible, incredible teacher librarian. She's had an extensive career. I'm going to kick it off to you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. I appreciate that very nice introduction, and I'm blushing. So thank you. I've been a librarian for over 20 years. I started my career, though, as a reporter. So I am just passionate about this topic and I'm thrilled to see 319 attendees as of this moment. I think it's so important that we teach our young people how to tell fact from fiction. And so in spite of different job titles, that's kind of been a theme in my career. And at this point, I'm working at the middle school level, teaching media literacy to eighth graders, three different courses. So it's good stuff. And I'm, like I said, just really happy to be here.
Dr. James, all the way from Texas. Representing the Texas area. Please just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and what you're doing.
Hello, everyone. I got that microphone back on. I was muted like Kathy. James Stansel. I'm the coordinator of tutoring services at Prairie View A&M University, which is an HBCU in the Houston, Texas area. I also am the chief program officer and founder of a reading advocacy nonprofit that focuses on media literacy, digital citizenship, called Intellectuel. I've been working in this area much like Dr. Collins for years upon years upon years. I was a high school teacher for 20 years before I went to higher ed. And I mentioned this earlier for those who weren't with us at the beginning in Virginia, as well as North Carolina and here in Texas. I still mentor middle and high school students with 100 Black Men of Metro Houston, where we, I work with them on media literacy, digital citizenship, and news literacy. And I'm also working with our students as a coordinator of tutoring services right out of high school, coming into college during our summer programs and our freshman year, getting them ready for the college level and, being ready to use resources and practice good digital citizenship and news literacy. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much. You're doing amazing work in the community. And then last but not least, Jeff Kaufman, who has had an extensive career. So you can read about him here. But if you would just summarize and tell us a little bit about your background. And we just want to thank you also for being here, Jeff.
Thank you, Ebony. I do appreciate that. I came a little unconventionally into education, having first started my career as a New York City police officer. I worked my way through the police department and law school and practiced for a little bit, and then generally got an offer to start a paralegal program in an inner city high school in East New York, Brooklyn, where I actually used to patrol as a police officer years before then. That led me to a position at the jail in Rikers, where I taught law and to incarcerated students, and was pretty much involved in aspects of incarcerated education. Worked my way, believe it or not, into computer science from there, and integrated a lot of the concepts of computer science into media literacy and the law, understanding the basis of our legal system and understanding the basis of the way in which we produce news and legal aspects of it, as well as literacy aspects of it. Now I teach in a Title I school located in Far Rockaway, Queens, in Far Rockaway, the old Far Rockaway High School complex. And I welcome this opportunity and everyone else here to be involved in an incredible organization that is facilitating the spread of an understanding of media literacy and news literacy in for high school and middle school students throughout the country. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. As you can tell, we have a variety of seasoned educators with us on the panel, with a variety of different disciplines and different roles and different previous jobs and careers before even education. You'll see some comments in there for you, Jeff, but we're so excited to be here with you again, empowering students with news literacy. So what we're going to talk about today is an introduction to NLP and kind of setting those foundations of what is news literacy, because we often get that question. We have created different questions from the panel, as well as ones that you are adding to the question mark in your screen. You can add some questions there to ask the panel. Our ambassadors are going to share out many of their examples from their classrooms, working with students, supporting other teachers, some tips and advice. Again, as was shared previously from Ebony about Newslit Nation, it is a free community to join that has all of our events, all of our resources, free for educators and students. And we have a Google Doc that we've been sharing for you to get all of the links and all of the contact information and sharing the resources at the very end. So Ebony and I would love to know, to kind of set the tone, news literacy and the skills to help students determine fact from fiction are part of my curriculum. Likert scale here, agree, disagree, strongly disagree. I don't know. What do you think? Is this something new in the classroom, Ebony, or do you think this has been around for a variety of years?
I think it's been around for a variety of years. We may have categorized it as something different, but I think it's been around. I think we're going to get a lot of agree and strongly agree out there.
Well, the good thing is, so far, no strongly disagree. So it seems that most people in your classroom are discussing those skills, the habits, the resources for news literacy in the classroom. Thank you. All right, so kind of setting that tone, the News Literacy Project was started in 2008 by the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Alan Miller, who is our current president and CEO, after he did some work with his daughter's middle school classroom. So any middle school teachers out there, please let us know. We would love to hear your experience in the chat. But part of our mission is young people have the right to a news literacy education. We firmly believe as an organization and with our colleagues that news literacy should be embedded in the American education experience. It should be part of what students learn in the classroom. They need to know how to identify credible information and empowering them to not only be advocates, but participants, not only in their civic lives, in their community, and in their country. So we truly believe believe in this right. Young people have the right to a news literacy education because information is the basis of civic literacy agency in action. Students are inheriting the largest and most complex information landscape in human history. The amount of misinformation shared, especially in this past year, whether it's from the pandemic, from the election, from vaccines, social justice issue, they are bombarded with information, and some of it misinformation, disinformation. They need to be equipped with determining fact from fiction, and not preparing them to successfully navigate and play a role in shaping this landscape is fundamentally unfair. So it is a skill that we firmly believe in. So what is news literacy? We hear this term, I'm sure Kathy kind of referenced it at the beginning. News literacy, media literacy, what is the difference between all these literacy? A few things to keep in mind when we talk about news literacy, along with skills and habits and resources, we want students and the public to be able to determine credibility of information. James was speaking earlier how that was rampant in Texas this past week with misinformation being shared. So it's definitely part of news literacy. We also want students and the public to be able to understand the standards of quality journalism. And I'm going to pause here and echo these because they might be on that quiz at the end. What are the standards of quality journalism? And the best way that I've heard explained is from multiple people in our organization is there is definitely a difference between somebody who is a journalist and somebody sharing blogging in their basement. So following these multiple credible sources, verification, avoidance of bias, is there a balance? Is there documentation, context, fairness? Students should be able to determine if what they're reading online is aligned to the standards of journalism, fact-based quality journalism. And finally, understand the importance of the free press and interact with news and other information in a way that promotes engaged participation in civic lives. So while we see news literacy pop up in many different disciplines, when we're speaking about news literacy at NLP, those are the specific skills and habits and resources that we are focusing on in the classroom. Ebony, anything to add about that?
No, I think that was perfect. I will say that we have a colleague, Peter, who really does a wonderful job of talking about how when we aren't empowering students with the abilities to become active consumers in civic life, we're actively, in fact, disempowering them. And I really like that because I think it speaks to the heart of why we exist and the heart of the work that we're doing and how we want to ensure that we are engaging with students in such a manner that they are able on their own to be able to determine fact from fiction, which is really what it is that we're doing and what we're hoping to achieve. So I think you hit the nail on the head, Shaylin.
Thank you. And great point there. We want to empower, not disempower students. So first question for our panel, in which you're going to share your thoughts and some of your experiences. Why is it important for students to have news literacy skills?
Obviously, we are in the middle of what is being called a misinformation crisis. Evidence-based reasoning is under assault. Social media spreads misinformation widely and rapidly, and yes, it can be a good thing, but that's a not so good thing. Our young people spend a large majority of their time on social media, and according to the Pew Research Center, 45% of teens say they are online almost constantly. Pretty scary. So along with that, social media, social science research shows it's possible to inoculate people against misinformation. So being an educator, educators can use proven approaches and strategies to help students learn how to separate fact from fiction. We can do it.
Yeah, great points. And I know, Dr. James, you have some more to echo here.
Absolutely. I'm going on with what Dr. Collins said. Everyone's a journalist now, you know, just like you said, Shaylin, from your basement, addict or whatever the case may be. Everyone has access to the news media, and it's important for young people and people really of all ages to be able to discern what's fact, what's fiction. Is there a slant or, you know, whatever the case may be. Now, on this slide here, I put one of my favorite books that I like to use when I'm working with young people. A Newshouse Guide to Student Journalism. I mean, news literacy is, in there as well as, you know, other aspects of being a good journalist. Because that's where all good journalism starts. You know, people start middle school level, elementary level, high school level, going into college. But news literacy skills are really just good research skills, in my view, because you're learning how to find different, sources and resources and learning how to use them properly. And I found, and I'm sure a lot of the educators here have found the same thing, that once you teach students how to properly engage the news, and become more news literate and media literate, that their news engagement level increases. They're going to watch the news more. They're looking at different sources, good sources, not, buddydownthestreet.com or something like that. And then they're able to have higher level conversations with you as an educator, with their family members, their parents. And it helps when they get to my level at college that they are able to do a lot of those things because the professors expect a lot. And when the students come in and they don't really have those skills, it's for us as academic support specialists to try to help provide those skills for them.
Yeah, so important. And I know some of the questions, some of the comments, this is hand in hand with what we do in our classroom. I see direct relationship to STEM and PBL and computer science. And Jeff, that's kind of your specialty. So I would love, two benefits of having news literacy across disciplines. I know you're going to dig into it later, but some thoughts on why is news literacy important?
Well, when you're dealing with news literacy, there's a couple of things also that have to be looked at. One of them is the concept of news and understanding what's going on in our world in terms of our democracy. A democracy can't survive without a full understanding of how it operates and empowering people to be able to understand that they can affect change when change is called for. As far as the cross-curricular aspects of it, computer science is probably one of the newer areas in academics, at least at the high school level. And the computer science curriculum has emphasized always computational thinking, which is so similar to news literacy. The idea of thinking in ways that encourage high-order cognitive functions, to be able to apply these skills to every subject that's taught in high school is something that computer science has taught me. And the ability, the parallels with news literacy are uncanny. It's just absolutely incredible.
Here's another question that we have for our panelists. What tips do you have for teachers? We know there are so many teachers who are on right now and some who are going to watch this recording later. So what tips can you offer them for teachers who want to empower their students in news literacy education?
Well, number one, just be brave enough to do it.
Bravery is a good one.
Number two, teach students to read past the headline, check the date and author credentials, just kind of basic things, but we do need to directly teach them how to do that. Show them how to evaluate the tone and the language, mm-hmm. Which is subtle and not quite so direct thing that they mm-hmm. need to understand. Get them in the habit of doing quick searches for at least one other source from whatever they're looking at that states the same thing as well as one source with an alternative viewpoint. So, yeah. And then teaching students how to effectively filter and select and organize and save and use information from multiple media sources as was mentioned earlier, research. It is research through research and multimedia projects. And that's my librarian lens as well as a gamified approach. So, there's so many ways you can actually make research fun and they don't even need to know that that's what they're doing. I just want to add, middle school students are naturally competitive. So, when you can make it into a game and have them playing detective, and beating each other, it's a great way to go.
I totally agree. I think that one of the issues is also not only the concept of competitiveness, but also the idea of bringing people together to solve problems. And that's one of the things that has taught me, not only through computer science, but news literacy, the idea of pulling evidence. Where does the evidence come from? How do you support it? So fundamental to every aspect of high school or middle school education, and making things built around projects, which is a big part of how we present news literacy to us, our teachers, and in this context.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything that Jeff and Dr. Collins said there. And, you know, for me early on, you know, when I first started teaching high school, I noticed that, you know, our students see us as subject matter experts and just experts in general. And so when I was doing, like Jeff said, I use a lot of, you know, projects and research assignments and things like that. And the students would often come to me and say, you know, Mr. Stanson, is this right? Is this a good source? Is this a good place? Or, you know, even outside of the, you know, research project, they say, well, you know, what do you think about this? Is this good? What's your opinion? So it taught me very early on, you know, I don't mind answering their questions, but I really want these students to be independent. And if, you know, if you teach middle school, particularly high school, they want to be independent. So I realized early on, let me teach them how to become more independent, teach them those skills that they need, and they would really appreciate it. And then they can go out and, you know, evaluate those sources themselves. On this slide here, you see culturally relevant pedagogy, also known as culturally responsive teaching. This is something that, you know, was very important to me when I was a K-12 educator and, you know, still at the college level. You want to be able to have students relate to the things that they're learning about or the things that they're you know, working on and so much. So, you know, you can use, you know, people's culture and their backgrounds to help teach some of these basic news literacy techniques. You know, just like, as I mentioned to you earlier, students were bringing examples to me because they trusted me and they felt like I was going to, you know, treat them fairly. So, you know, what do you think about this or that? Okay, well, let's look at these, you know, these different, you know, criteria here. Do you think this is a good source? Where did it come from? You know, you can look at some of the things on Checkology or some of our sources that, you know, that we have with News Literacy Project, or some that you maybe you have on your own, and use those to share with the students so the students can do those things themselves. It makes them feel empowered, it makes them feel important, and then they'll go home to their parents. You know, someone mentioned earlier, it's not just young people, but they'll go home to their parents, and a lot of the students are already out of school. They didn't have as much education as their students have now, and they listen to their students when they talk about things like that. And it's important for them to be able to go and apply what they've learned, like I said, at home, in the classroom, in the community, on the sports field, you know, whatever, the locker room, because, you know, they can share, even if they're not in your class, they can learn from those students who are in your class because they share that information and they can spread around the school and around the community.
So I know we're still talking about how to empower students, and I'm sure you have seen in the chat, this is not just a young person problem. And Dr. James, with all of your work, you work not only with students of all ages, but college students and even digital citizenship for ages. So talk about that for briefly.
Yeah, very, very briefly. yes, I mentioned earlier that I work with 100 Black Men of Metropolitan Houston, which they have those chapters, 100 Black Men of America all across the country. So 100 of those chapters, the largest mentoring organization for African-American or Black males in the world. And one of the things I do with the organization is, like you said, Shailene, work with the students about digital citizenship and media literacy, because they all have these cell phones, you know, and they know how to do all that stuff, but they don't know how it works and how it can affect them. So we work with them. But media literacy for seniors, that's something my organization, Intellectuel, once COVID is kind of slowing down a little bit, we want to do some programs with older people. And this comes from my own mother, because she would send me all kinds of crazy stuff and say things, and, you know, and I'm like, Mom, that's not exactly true. And I know Ibby and I have talked a little bit about conspiracy theories and different communities and, you know, things like that. So being able to discern fact from fiction, to look, yes, Shailen, fact from fiction and know where to look for, you know, those kind of things is, you know, is very, very important. And of course, digital citizenship, which Shailen, like you said earlier, we've got media literacy, news literacy, digital citizenship, all these different, you know, types of, you know, terms. But think of digital citizenship in terms of a driver's license. You have to have a driver's license to be able to drive a car. But unfortunately, we don't have to have a digital citizenship license to be on the internet and to do all these different kinds of things. So it's a way to get people to be a little more informed, because they're held accountable for what they do. So it's a way to get them, you know, more informed. So we do that kind of work in the community. And the last thing here, I have a partnership with Luis Dunnell-Gottberg. He's a professor at Rice University, and we've started something called Houston Youth Power Research, where we're working with Black and Brown youth in Houston to get them more educated about media representation, digital literacy, digital citizenship, media literacy, all those kind of things in their communities, so they can go out and be leaders in their communities to help educate other people, but also to work on problems in the community, community action, social justice issues, but be better educated and be better armed, with more knowledge about media. The Power is a project on writing, educating, and recording research. So we're teaching them how to be good researchers as well as good digital citizenship, digital citizens.
Oh, okay. So I guess I'll talk about the intersection of news literacy and computer science. So as I mentioned before, one of the aspects of computer science which really attracted me to it, because I had taught law and civics courses in the past, was the fact that computer science took problems and looked to solve them. And the way in which they did that was to set up projects. And these projects allowed students to apply their skills that they learned in critical ways. And also understand, which is really important, is to understand that there is no one right answer. And surely in news literacy, we know that at extremes, there are things that are clearly false, and there are things that are much more reliable. But we really don't have we don't have right and wrong answers in the sense of looking at a final product, whether it's true or not. And one of the things that computer science does, it teaches us that there are multiple pathways to get to solutions, and the way in which we solve things determine how it is that a project is going to be handled. So we need to understand that and contribute to that fact to be able to do that. So we develop project-based learning in which problems are then given to students, and then they are either in generally in teams. We do pair programming, and teams look to do that. And I'm given also an opportunity in computer science to be able to allow students to really explore the world around them in terms of computer science and how the media and news is affecting the kinds of things that go through in the use and their use of their computers. So I guess at this point you want to ask whether people are
yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
I love that you are kicking us off into our poll. This is our second poll if you are kind of recently joining. So the statement is, I currently use project-based learning in my classroom. So we're interested to know the techniques you all use in your classrooms. This poll is going a mile a minute. Please let us know. This is great to hear. Jeff, maybe you can talk a little bit about project-based learning while folks are taking the poll.
Right. So the idea is that allowing that students to not only express themselves through working together to be able to solve problems, but being able to use all the skills that we provided them. And the News Literacy Project allows in its many programs and resources that we have a bunch of tools that people use. I'm now currently working with my students in a section of the curricula dealing with called info zones, where students are actually tearing apart the idea of what is the purpose of this particular piece of information. And there are a lot of ways of doing it. There's great slideshows you can show. There's other types of resources that can be used. But the discussions that you can have by assigning certain particular types of news items and then having students look at it through their lenses, through others' lenses, through ways in which they've been taught to analyze and question the reliability of the news is just ripe for project-based learning, just like it is in computer science. And the discussions that go on in my breakout room, since we're all remote now, is unreal. It's something students that have been quiet, that are afraid to talk and deal with, they get excited. They want to know, like, you know, what's going on. We talked today about the idea about Tiger Woods and what happened to him yesterday, and how the emphasis was how it saved his life. And somebody said, well, you know, if he had hit a person, maybe that person wouldn't be around. And I was like, I was floored. I said, how is it possible? They're thinking of pedestrians at a time when all the focus was on Tiger Woods and this compartment that he was saved from, his life was saved from. And I thought, wow, this is a product of the idea that they are thinking way beyond what the news is presenting, and basically coming up with a focus that if I was reporting the news, I would want to investigate. I would want to see what it is. And that came from one of my students just today. So it is a model that allows them, it empowers them. It sees that they don't have to just consume news or consume events, but they can actually question it and understand where it's coming from, why it's coming from, to go further in depth and seek whatever is necessary to change and understand their environment, which is why they go to school in the first place.
Yeah, lots of agreement in the chat, and that brings us to our next question, because through your experiences and also your sharing so far on the webinar, it's obvious that all of you have experience in project-based learning or community-based learning instead of the traditional lecture model, along with our attendees. It seemed that most of them, Ebony, used project-based learning at some point in their classroom. And even through this remote and hybrid learning, project-based learning is still possible and people are still using it, even when it is challenging for both educators and teachers. So we would love to hear, how does project-based learning, and you kind of touched upon these things already, Jeff, but if you want to answer this and the rest of the panel, how does project-based learning empower students rather than the traditional lecture mode?
Okay, if I could just another example, understanding, and this is where you can take these resources in news literacy and expand them in my area into computer science. Understanding artificial intelligence was a really great way to deal with it. We had in Brownsville, Brooklyn, the inner city area, we had an apartment building that started to do facial recognition of its residents. And it was an attempt to basically, keep people that they didn't want in the apartment out and keep people in that belong there. And it was a way of bringing, 21st century technology into the landlord-tenant relationship. And there was an outcry. My students were involved in part of that. And what happened was it became a news item. And it's still actually hotly debated as to whether or not this is something the government should be done to. And we use that, and some students use that, to understand how Black and Brown students are not represented properly in artificial intelligence and facial recognition, because the models that are used to build these up are not based on Black and Brown people. And when they understood that, they came across a way to understand how it is that they could work to teach our legislators and others what the problems of this program were and how it was marginalizing them. And they developed a strong sense of empowerment from it. And we learn through a lot of things that happen in the news, looking at it in a way that says, well, look, we don't have to accept the way in which these things are happening. We can put pressure on legislators, on our parents, on our community leaders to understand why things happen the way they do, and filter those kinds of things that are important and make sure that they're true and don't spread the kinds of information that leads to further alienation and ways of avoiding problems rather than dealing with them.
And that's a great point, and I know Dr. James, you were also putting stuff in the chat. This is part of your teaching mantra. Tell us how you empower through community and project-based learning.
Yes, you know, it's very similar to like what Jeff was saying. You know, students want to feel empowered. You know, again, culturally relevant pedagogy slash culturally responsive instruction. You know, they want to feel like their communities are represented. You know, I went to school in rural North Carolina, where the only time I saw folk that looked like me was, you know, they were slaves or in some unenviable position, you know, when we were going through school. And that, you know, that can, you know, affect you, you know, mentally. So when you're looking at, you know, at using project-based, you know, learning or, you know, problem solving, you know, issues in the community and such, I see Imani's talking about the Flint water crisis and having some of her students, you know, sample some of their own water. I mean, it makes it real for them. It's in their real communities. It's not just something that's so far away. And, you know, you're dealing with things that are like them. And the facial recognition is something that's real, too. I mentioned Ruha Benjamin and some of the work she's doing with, like, racial issues concerning, you know, technology. Another thing I like about project-based learning is that, you know, students get so used to you telling them exactly what you want done. You know, tell me what you want done and so I can get an A. Well, no, this is something different here. This is something that is meaningful for you, something that you have chosen, you know, within certain boundaries or, you know, parameters. But we're going to set a rubric up, or we're going to tell you the way things need to be done. But I'm not going to tell you exactly what you need to do, you know, but just do it, you know, in this way. And then you may find something that you're interested in. You know, I talked to, you know, some of my students who were in high school, they did some projects for me in psychology and in history. They went on to do that similar stuff when they went to college, you know, for honors, you know, theses or for projects and things like that, using ref works and things like that. They had their same sources that they could, you know, they could use and come back to. So making it real for them and making it where they're doing work for themselves or for their communities and not just for you. You know, it's not just an assignment to check off. It's something that's meaningful for them in their lives.
Yeah. Great point. And I know you've already spoke about this, and I have linked your resources, Jeff, that you mentioned on this slide into the Google Doc. But I am going to toss it over to Dr. Kathy, because there's a lot of people in the audience right now that play different roles, such as yourself as a technology teacher, coach, librarian. So how can you, with multiple roles, maybe not necessarily have a specific group of students, but how can you support staff and colleagues with empowering students and project-based learning through news literacy? What are some ideas that you had, or maybe examples you could share?
Well, I'd say, again, just starting small is really important. And again, taking that, which you've all been talking about all along here, is taking that cross-curricular approach. So it's not about what content you teach. I mean, there's room for this, for teaching of news literacy in every content area. So just finding one in, and right now there's no shortage of current events, you know, grabbing some of the misinformation that's out there, having your students, just once a week, have a discussion. Everyone, your assignment is just bring in one article or a social media post that you think is biased, and let's talk about it. So that's just a really simple, you know, way to get the conversation rolling. I want to mention American Student Assistance right now. And I'm not being paid by them, but I just want to put it out there. There's an awesome contest going on right now where there's four different categories. This is something that any teacher could incorporate easily into their classes right now, since we're talking about PBL, but life on Mars, right? We just had we had the satellite landing of Perseverance, which is so exciting. You know, I mean, this is all, there's just so no shortage of content right now. Global warming. So students, there are four categories, and the other two are related to COVID. So students get to pick a category, and through the lens of one profession, which they decide in teams, they need to figure out possible solutions, and they have to do research, but we won't call it research, and they have to find you know, multiple ideas and come together. And so there's teamwork and all that good stuff. So, and that's something, it doesn't have to take up the whole class period. So whatever your content area is, you can be a math teacher and just squeeze that in for, you know, 20 minutes at the end of the day. There's flexibility with how you present this. I guess that's my number one thing I'd want to share, is there's so much flexibility in how you integrate it. So, just
starting. Thank you. So I know, Jeff, you've been speaking about this. And before we move to the next question, people are dying to know that last book that you mentioned on this slide, Weapons of Math. question. Why the heck should somebody go out and get that? How does that relate to what we're talking about today?
Okay. So Kathy O'Neill is an incredible computer scientist who basically wrote a book concerning the misuse of algorithms and how algorithms reinforce past prejudices and past discrimination. And Weapons of Mass Destruction, if anything, the first chapter deals with teacher evaluations, strangely enough, and talks about how unfair teacher evaluations are and the models that are used, the algorithmic, oh, forget it. I can't say it. No, computer science.
Algorithms.
Thank you. Well, I was trying
easy
to make
for you to say, Jeff.
Yeah, I should be right. In any case, the idea that using algorithms in terms of evaluating teacher performance was something that was something that she showed in her book was misguided and contained a lot of inaccuracies. So the idea and how it was reported, what's an effective teacher, what's not an effective teacher, so that kind of hit really close at home. But she talks about it in terms of the criminal justice system and in terms of, and she's worked with Rua Benjamin as well, dealing with some of the misuses of technology and actual news and how it's misused as well.
So earlier, Dr. Kathy spoke about bravery briefly and just talked about teachers being brave enough to start. And so my question for each of you would be, what advice can you give to teachers on how to get started, which I think sometimes is really like the hardest thing to do. So what's one piece of advice you would give teachers on how to get started?
Well, for me, just briefly, anytime, you know, when I would go to a new school, I would always go straight to the library. It'll be the first place I go to talk to the librarians and, you know, the folk there.
Each so allies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Every time, even now at the college level, you know, we have resource librarians that work in specific areas. But, you know, they're going to know the most up-to-date databases, you know, resources, you know, information that your students could use. And also, like you said, Ebony, they're great allies, you know, mm-hmm. for you. You know, beyond that, you know, looking in the community, I know, you know, I think our name was, you know, Imani and some of, you know, folk were talking about different issues and things that they could look at. We're talking about, you know, project-based, community-based things. Find out what some of the issues are, culturally responsive instruction. What are some of the things your students may want to learn about and find out about and figure out ways to integrate, you know, them in when you're talking about news literacy or media literacy, you know, instruction. But definitely number one is to go find folk like Dr. Collins there and get to be her friend.
I would agree with that totally. And Dr. Collins, I'm sure, is a great resource for that. And there are plenty in our community that deal that. But I want to go a little different because as teachers, one of the things that we should be good at, and I think we are, is understanding the atmosphere of our classroom. And what's really important, I think, in terms of introducing anything that has the potential to be misunderstood or misused, is the idea that we, as teachers, have to understand how to present this in our particular way, that there's a trust that is involved. Because my students couldn't engage in the kinds of things, at least at the depth that I think that they engaged in, unless they trusted me, unless I trust them. And it has to be mutual, and they have to understand, because we're dealing sometimes with sometimes very controversial issues that, you know, that especially, but it doesn't, not just high school, middle school, anywhere, where, you know, in the community may be involved in. And there may be very sensitive subjects that you may be totally misunderstood. If you don't have that trust, if you don't have that atmosphere in the classroom to be able to inculcate this sense of trust, it's going to leak, and and your administrators are going to come back at you. It's extremely political at times, and we have to be very sensitive to that. I'm not saying don't do it. By all means, do it. And I think it's when it works, it's absolutely wonderful. But keep in mind that these are, you know, sometimes can be very politically sensitive concepts, and that when you present them, that they're done fairly and in the right way in terms of how you know your classroom, so that your teachers understand who they're teaching and the students understand who's teaching them.
Yeah. I just want to jump in. Jeff and Dr. Stansel are making amazing points. And I'd say, yeah, creating that classroom community, that safe space where all views are represented, that is the foundation. You can't really move beyond that till you've taken that really important step. So just agreeing with you there. And also, as a News Lit project ambassador, got to put a plug for these amazing resources that are available for free at a time where our schools are really strapped for dollars. So, I mean, all this stuff is there and it's free. I use the news goggles and the SIFT on a weekly basis. And what's nice about those, other reporters are sharing their takes on the news that's coming out. So that kind of takes it off of, you know, I'm presenting the views of these reporters and I'm just the messenger, right? So I feel like that helps me as a teacher to teach news literacy. And yeah, Checkology is an amazing resource and also really current and relevant. So yeah, take advantage of all of that. And also what I love about Checkology, it for this time of Zoom in a room, this crazy hybrid, you know, or remote or whatever we're doing, it's perfect because it's self-paced. So I can start them off as a group with a video just to hook that, their attention, and then you know, set them free to do their own thing and then come back and have a great, you know, classroom discussion. Yeah. And it's all there. Thanks.
Love that. That's great. I think while Ebony's perusing through the questions, yeah, to share with the panel, I'm just going to quickly share our resources since you mentioned many of them. Again, the News Literacy Project is nonprofit, nonpartisan, and we provide free resources for educators, students, and the general public. Kathy was just mentioning Checkology. That is our flagship platform, and it contains lessons, everything from conspiratorial thinking to misinformation to info zones, as James talked about earlier. So a variety of lessons that you can access for free there. We do have office hours coming up tomorrow, and I put that on the document. So if you want to learn more, definitely stop by. SIFT, again, contains many of the resources that you were just sharing as well. It's our weekly newsletter, and the education team takes the mis and disinformation from the previous week, packages it up to a newsletter delivered to your mailbox every Monday, not only with news goggles, slides that you can use in your classroom, discussion questions, as well as a new feature, Ask a Journalist, so you can have your students submit a question to be answered by our staff as well, Hannah and Susanna. News Lit Camp and other professional learning opportunities, all of which are free as well. We have the resource library and all of those great tools. All can be found on News Lit Nation, which Ebony spoke about at the top of the hour. So if you want access to any of those, News Lit Nation is the place to go. Connect not only with these ambassadors, but check out all of our free resources all in one place. Ebony, did you find a good question to pose to the panel?
Yes, I'm going to answer the first question here very quickly. So someone asked, how is joining News Lit Nation different from joining the News Literacy Project? And there is no joining of the News Literacy Project, but News Lit Nation is our community of educators from all across the country. And you can register for News Lit Nation on newslit.org, which is the News Literacy Project's website. And then you can become a part of the community, have access to all of these free resources that Shaylin just spoke about a moment ago. So I encourage you to do that. And then one good question. There's so many really good ones. Julie asked, are there any tips for introducing these resources to special education students that have difficulty reading and using mostly audio information? Does anyone have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do. We work in integrated classrooms, where students are from various abilities. And one of the things working out, it's no different than working in any other subject. So I don't know specifically how it would apply here, but I can tell you that that we all come to these teams and the way in which I set up the projects with different abilities and talents. And the teams quickly understand how to use those roles and employ them in coming up with group projects. But it can be challenging dealing with a large amount of academic diversity, as it would be in any subject. But students with special needs many times can still relate to a lot of the subjects, maybe just not in the same way that other students that can. But they eventually will get to the same point if they work together to be able to do it. So I encourage group projects as a way to deal with it, and a little hand holding, which we do in any subject as well, also works.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, one that I had not thought about recently. To go along with what Jeff said, just briefly, you also have radio news, and radio programs and things like that. So if they're more audio or hearing or oriented, you could do some things with that, or visuals like cartoons or things that are not necessarily at a super high level, and then you can kind of work your way up from there. I think Aaron mentioned NPR stories are always listable from their website. Yeah, that's a great idea. Or Voice of America or something like that, which uses, I forgot what the English is called, but it's like a lower level English for people from other countries. So that's all.
Yeah, that's
Shailene.
And I know
I was wondering if you had a thought here.
Yes, thank you. I think I'm on delay here. Sorry, Ebony. I know on all of the resources that we provide, and we do have lots of colleagues in the chat right now. There are some upper elementary resources being developed and pushed out on Newslet Nation, and that link is on the document. So upper elementary resources. We're also a proud partner page with Flipgrid, which does a lot to support accessibility in the classroom with Immersive Reader and all of those options, as well as a shout out to my team that's also in the chat. We provide comprehensive lesson guides that contain all of the elements for lessons that teachers can then differentiate for their students. So lots of different ways to provide opportunities for growth for all your students, because let's be honest, not every student starts or ends at the same place. And so it's something teachers have to do quite often. Ebony, another question and passing it back to you.
I think you, and you answered someone's questions who wondered about resources for K-5. So, for the person who asked that question, as Shailene mentioned, we recently started developing resources for upper elementary. You can find those. You can learn more about that on Newslet Nation at newslet.org. And that's currently in development. So we'll be sending out more on that very soon. So another question in the chat that we have here that I think is really important is, what do we do when a vocal part of our community criticizes our schools for quote unquote brainwashing our students with mainstream news media, and they put parenthetically CNN, MSNBC, and say we should teach citizen journalism? So I think this question kind of gets at some of the things that both Dr. Stanso and Dr. Collins were mentioning earlier.
Yeah, well, I'm very politically sensitive. As you can imagine, it can be daunting dealing with criticism at every level. And I think this comes in when we need to be educators not only of our students but also of their parents as well. There is no real answer to it, because it's going to be the way in which you deal with a particular population. We've had controversies in science and in other areas as well, where communities' understanding of what should be taught and how it should be taught sometimes conflicts with the state mandates or what your school district or supervisor tells you to do. The thing is that we are educators, and we approach problems like these looking to education solutions, and that's how I do it. So when I find somebody saying, why did you tell my child such and such, doesn't happen that often, but when it does, you know, I'll explain to them why I did that. And it's not an excuse. This is my approach. And I think that when I was mentioning before about developing that trust, it's the ability to disagree. It's the willingness to accept controversy and understand that people don't have to accept everyone else's idea. We are different, and we should look at the beauty of our difference, not the difficulty of our difference.
Yeah, I just want to throw in there, it's all about empathy, really. And the more you can bring the parent community, as was mentioned, and your administration on board with what you're doing, educating them about what you're doing. And really, this is about breaking down barriers and opening hearts and minds. So what we're doing is tremendously important.
Thank you. I agree with that. And we just have a few more questions, but I think you both just really answered. And I'm going to toss it to you, Shaylin, in just a moment. But I think you also answered another question, which was, in short, how do you approach news literacy in a highly polarized area? And I think you both touched on that. And so I think for the final question, I think a lot of you have touched on a lot of bits and pieces of questions. And there are several along this line as well. So this one says, how can we help students internalize media literacy skills that we teach so they become second nature? And then someone else asks, how do we help them kind of communicate with their peers when they're learning news literacy? Like, how do we help them internalize that and then communicate?
Okay, so how are we going to get them to encourage discussion, internalize the content? Okay. So the I don't know that I know there's no easy answer to it, because I'm thinking about it, and I guess your and this is where I trust teachers, because they know what their students can do, and they know what their students and how the students are going to deal with it. And you can sense pretty easily that how a discussion is going, and I've had them go south, and no disrespect to people living in the South, it's just an expression, but they've gone bad. And sometimes you have to, you know, make a teachable moment out of it and talk about what happened and really dissect it. But the idea is that these things are not going to happen overnight. The whole project here and the whole idea of introducing this branch of pedagogy involves a process. And what the News Literacy Project does, and the resources that are here, is it allows you to get to that point, to you know, step by step scaffolding whatever is necessary to bring to students the ideas and resources necessary to be able to engage in this kind of education in a meaningful and productive way, and it's really tested, and it's really been used by a large number of people, and it works. I can tell you from my personal experience, from a large group of people, students in my advanced placement classes, to students that are struggling with reading and literacy. So it works at all different levels, and it's up to you as a teacher to really make that translation necessary to encourage that kind of engagement that's required to really go through this curriculum.
Again, on the Google document, there's all those ways to connect. As Ebony mentioned, our ambassadors are here to connect with educators across the nation, providing excellent content. You will see on the slides, it not only has everyone's Twitter, but also has their emails. Would love to hear final words from everyone and then have Ebony wrap it up for us. So let's start with Dr. Kathy. Final words?
Just keep the faith. Believe in the power and the value of what you're doing in transforming young minds. Don't give up. And remember, you're not alone, because we're all here trying to do the same thing.
I think have fun. And really, this is really what this is about. We sometimes get super serious about things. And don't get me wrong, these can be very serious subjects. But we also have to have the ability to relate and especially in the environment, the way we're teaching. I'm sure everybody has their little problems dealing in stories about remote teaching and stuff that, you know, I never thought after teaching for 20 years that I would be teaching this way. But we have fun. We engage. We make jokes. We try to be sensitive to people at the same time to try to put them in the frame of mind, being very mindful of what they're facing, putting that all together. You get what you get, what you put in. The more you put into it, the more your students will realize how important it is and the more that they will get from it. And I think you'll feel extremely satisfied while having fun doing it. That's about the best advice I could give.
And for me, first of all, I love being on a panel with Dr. Collins and Jeff and Ebony and Shaylin. I mean, this is like the highlight of my day. But beyond that, I would say, and I always tell my students this, college, middle school, high school, whatever, use your resources. You know, we've been talking about that throughout. You have lots of free resources, resources that are low cost, even if they're not free. Use your resources. I hate for people to say they didn't have any resources or sources and they didn't know where to go. I mean, this information is out here. And this is not just important, in terms of grades in school. This is important for life, for these students to be able to pick up these skills. Because we have all seen the danger of conspiratorial thinking and misinformation. And so it's incumbent upon us as school leaders, educational leaders, to do the best that we can. Because if we don't, we're going to pay for it in the future. So let's make sure we try to use these resources and help educate people as best we can.
Wow. I honestly, Shaylin, cannot think of a better note to end on. I just want to thank each of our ambassadors for joining with us today. As Shaylin mentioned, you can find their information both on the screen. You can also find it on Newslit Nation at newslit.org by clicking on the Educators tab, and you can learn more about our ambassadors. You can connect with them if you're anywhere in their regions. You can also see the full suite of ambassadors. We have 13 in 10 cities across the country. You can learn more about the program and even let us know if you're interested in applying for future ambassador roles. But I want to just take a moment to thank each of you, the educators who joined today, for understanding the value and importance of this conversation and time together, for attending to our experts and being able to kind of learn and grow together, which is what Newslit Nation is all about as we're building out this community at the News Literacy Project. And then finally, I want to thank my colleague, Shaylin, for leading us through this conversation and our partnership with EdWeb to really empower students to discern fact from fiction, which is the entire reason why we exist. It is such a pleasure to do this work and co-labor in this vision with each of you. And I want to thank you all for joining today. Thank you to each of our attendees. And we hope that you left with something that you can take into your classrooms to continue to empower students in this mission. Thank you all.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.